Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Morris to Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay, and tonight we have some very, very informative information for you, and I'm asking that you all pay very close attention and keep in mind that everything that you hear here this evening is already in Tahaka's library, and in there you can listen to this information over and over, and the components for what you will need is there as well, all the templates, the documents and stuff that you would need to carry out what you are going to do involving this situation. We're dealing with administrative release from prison and your will, part two. And we want to answer the following questions this evening. Administrative procedure in prison, how do we use this procedure in relationship to the courts and police? Releasing loved ones from prison. Bringing a claim and your will, establishing your status. What about sovereignty? Why should you have a will? What is important about our will and trust? What about the rules of administration? How do we respond in court and handling the IRS? We're going to try to deliver all this for you this evening, and I'm going to ask that you all please pay very, very close attention to what's going to be discussed here this evening, because it is very, very valuable information, and I'm going to go ahead and start with getting your loved ones released from prison, so pay very close attention to this information.
Greetings. Welcome to THCTrust.org. That's T as in Tango, H as in Hotel, C as in Charlie, trust.org. In this session, which may end up to be about two or three sessions, we are going to reveal how you would get someone out of jail or get somebody out of prison. And it does not matter whether it's 10 years or 20 years. That's irrelevant. And this is not going to cost you a lot of money. So, you know, I'm dedicating this out to the black man and the black woman and the black race. And I'm hoping that some active people will get a hold of this audio, and they will execute the blueprint that I'm laying out before you, so that we can go in here and get these black men out of jail. And not just black men, but I'm specifically talking to my own race. But rest assured, for everybody that's watching, this is just as much for you, too, because the principles apply for everyone. I just have my mission that I know what I'm required to do, and I know that this is the time right now for the bonds to be redeemed for the Jews that are in bondage, and that's the black American that doesn't know his race. Anyway, I'm laying the information out there so there's no excuse why you should not be doing something to get your brother or to get your son or to get your husband out of jail, because I'm about to lay it out to you. And more so, if he has some type of awareness of who he is, and that being not a slave of the United States as a corporation, or not being a vessel of the United States, if he has that understanding of who he is, that's going to make this process much more powerful. But what I'm about to lay out to you will work. If you overstand and you see this thing through, it will work. And now you have the audio right here. So this may get lengthy and it may get long, but if you listen to it again and again, by the time you get to the second or third time of listening to this whole series over and over again, it's going to be easier and second nature, and you're going to see how this thing works together and how it flows. So you're going to understand when I give you the series of documents that you need to file and the step-by-step process that you need to do. You're going to see why it's going to work, and you're going to know how to make it work, and you're going to know what to do if for whatever reason someone tries to stand in your way. But this, now listen to what I'm saying now. This is going to work, so I need active people. We need you to get out here and do this, because there's no excuse. We're not charging you. The information is right here. Now, in this first session right here, I just want to go over the necessary documents that need to be filed before we really get to moving, before you can do anything. And a lot of those documents you can find at thctrust.org. You can find the template, and you'll have to fill them out. When I say fill them out, you mean make them personal. Put the personal things that apply to you in there. Now, these are just documents that have to be in the record. So before we even pursue getting the vessel out of captivity or getting the body out of the jail or the prison, we got to have these documents in the record. Now, those documents are the will. So that means the person that's incarcerated needs to get a will on file. And then you need a testamentary letter that establishes you, the person listening to this, as the executor for his will. And then you can also do a letter of executorship. Pretty much in his will, he needs to establish that you are the executor for his estate. Excuse me. Then you need a declaration of status. The declaration of status is going to be for you as the executor, so that you can establish, so that you will establish for the public that you're not a slave to the United States in the same boat as the vessel that you're trying to get released. But you also need a declaration of status for the vessel to rebut the presumptions of law that he is a vessel of the United States and subject to the law of the sea and the commercial system and all of that. So that declaration of status, it can be indigenous sovereign standing, which you can find a good declaration on thctrust.org, or it can be, you know, your nationalizing documents that you've declared your status as being, you know, a Washita or perhaps from one of these other nations. But, you know, I say your status as a Moor. You know, you can declare your status as a Moorish, I don't want to say a Moorish American, just as a Moor. Because one thing about declaring your status is if you declare your status, now you have to be careful that somebody doesn't try to label you as a terrorist, because now we have all these new ways that people can be labeled terrorists. So along with your status, you're going to need a peace treaty. Now, there happens to already be a peace treaty between Morocco and the United States of America. So that's a peace treaty for the Moors that's already in place. So you need that peace treaty so that you are not labeled an enemy combatant. Plus, if you read through that treaty, which I'll also have at thctrust.org, you will see that there is, you know, it's written and it deals with vessels, but that's really what we're talking about here. You'll see there's already provisions in the treaty for the release of the body. You say you need the will. They need to establish you as the executor of their estate. You need a letter of executorship and a testamentary letter. if you can get one of those, and you will be able to get one of those, so I shouldn't even say if. And what I'm talking about is you can Google that. Once you establish a will in the appropriate court, the county of where wills are filed, where you're at, it may be the superior court, it may be the probate court, but if you file a will in common form, they'll issue the letter of testamentary, I think that's what it's called, and pretty much what it is, it's the court seal acknowledging you as the executor of the estate. So once you have those documents, you're going to need to set up your estate with the IRS. Now, the reason why you're doing that is because you're going to need some form of enforcement when it's time to actually get the vessel, get the body out of jail. If a judge or someone, public official or the sheriff or anybody, if somebody's standing in the way, they want to prejudice your rights or trespass against the estate, that's why you want to have your estate information already set up with the IRS so that you have someone to enforce for you. Because ultimately where we're going with this is we're going to go accept for value the obligations, make them payable to the order of the United States of America. And through our understanding of trust, we're going to make the public trustee discharge the obligations to the Treasury and release the vessel. Now, that's why, again, you need to have your estate information set up with the IRS, because that is where your enforcement comes in. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be affecting the accounting. So what happens is if the public trustee or the judge, whoever has been appointed, if they don't do what they're required to do, then we bring the IRS in, because the IRS is all about creditor and enforcing against the debtor. And if we're there to settle the account and we're doing everything we're supposed to do and they're withholding the remedy or they're withholding our settlement, then they become the tax protester, the withholder, and that's why the IRS will come in and collect for us. But that's, we're going to be going into that part later of how to initiate that and how to work toward making that happen. But right now, I just wanted to express that this is probably the reason why you want to get your estate set up. Now, for the purpose of what we're trying to do, I would not overburden yourself worrying about what is the exact right way to set up this estate and does it have to be done this way. You know, when I set up my estate, and I'm not saying that it's done the right way, if there is a right way, but I just called the IRS on the phone and said, hey, I need an EIN for an estate, and let them guide me through it. They were like, is it a bankruptcy estate or a decedent estate? And I told them a decedent estate. So they asked for the Social Security number, and I gave them the Social Security number. Then they asked me who the executor of the estate was, and I told them who the executor of the estate was. And then they asked me, well, what's the executor's Social Security number or tax ID number? And I said, he doesn't have one. And they were okay with that. And I just shared that with you because I know that's a question a lot of people have. Yeah. Now, this is the same thing you will be doing for the person that's in jail or in prison. Once they file the will, they issue the letter as you being the executor over their estate, and you guys have your declarations on file, you will be setting up the estate for them. So once you get that estate EIN and the IRS has your name as the executor for that person's estate, so you're good on that part for right now. And also, I kind of jumped over the declaration. No, or did I? I think I did touch on it. Basically, the declaration is to rebut all the presumptions of law that you're a vessel of the United States or you're subject to the foreign law of the sea, which is the reason why they're locked up. They're locked up because of the commercial code, the commercial law. They have unpaid obligations. They have debts that need to be resolved in the public. And that's the only reason why they're locked up. They're locked up because their vessel is being subject to a foreigner's will, to foreign law, because they don't have a will on file. You know, no one knows what the desire is for that vessel. So we're fixing these things. So all we're dealing with right now is we haven't done nothing to get the vessel out yet. We're just laying the framework. So you have to have a will. You got to be established the executor for their estate. Have to have a declaration of status for the both of you. And you set up your estate with the IRS. Now, and this is not necessary, but it's something I'm still building out, so I can't really speak on it a whole lot. Again, it's not completely necessary, but it makes this process a lot stronger. And that's the need for a trust agreement. And I'm saying trust agreement as opposed to what many of you are familiar with as a secured party agreement or a security agreement. A lot of people put on the UCC-1 and they do the addendum with the long property list and all of that. That's a security agreement, but we don't want to be dealing with securities because that's with the commercial system, from my understanding. And that's the foreign law, the law from the sea, which is the same type of law which allows for the vessel to be incarcerated now, subject to the will of the foreigner. So we don't want to have a security agreement because we are on the land. And on the land, we have an inheritance and we deal with trusts. So instead of having a security agreement, we can make it a trust agreement. And you can still file it on a UCC-1. Of course, use the box Bailey, Baylor. And some of us are doing that anyway, but we're calling it a security agreement. But let's not call it that because that's confessing to be subject to the contract. And we're not subject to the contract. Everything that's on the land and the vessels, they belong to us. They belong to us. We are the grantor and the beneficiary. God with us. You see what I'm saying? Emmanuel. That's what it is. You're the grantor. You're the establisher, the creator of the trust, and you're the one to benefit from it. So let's not call these things security agreement. Let's call them trust agreements. And you can still put evidence of the trust on a UCC-1. And, of course, we're using Bailey, Baylor, because a bailment is a trust. And it's not going to go from the uppercase man to the lowercase man. What it is as the bailor or the grantor of this trust, you know, you would be in the area of what would usually be a secured party. And from my opinion, someone in the public, one of the public trustees, is going to be the bailee because he's the one that is in receipt. He's the one that's in receipt of the assets and required to use the assets in accordance with the terms of the bailment. That's a little bit beyond the scope of this, so don't get wrapped up around a security agreement. It's not necessary. But as we start working through this, and I'll have a sample of that, and then if you want to use it, you can. But again, as we get through this full process, you'll see that that's not necessarily a requirement, but it's something that will only help. So now that you have all the documents in place, I'll just recap the documents that you need, and that'll conclude the paperwork that has to be in place before you start your process. And then next we'll kind of go into the process of what you actually do. So as a final recap, the person in prison needs to have the will on file in the county. And if they're doing federal time, it's preferable that you put it in the general filing of the district. The will has to point to the executor, which needs to be you. You need a letter a letter of executorship. Template of those two documents can be found at thctrust.org. And the court should issue the testamentary letter, also acknowledging you as the executor. Then both of you need a declaration of status. We have a declaration of indigenous status on thctrust.org, but I would also recommend perhaps, I think that also your declaration establishing yourself as a Moor or as a part of another nation would also be beneficial. So it's good to have that on file also. With your peace treaty, And if you don't have a peace treaty already, make one up. You know, write one. But you want a peace treaty on file. Now, and again, remember when I say on file, these things need to be recorded in the record, preferably the record of where the person's locked up. So if they're locked up doing federal stuff, then in the district. On a state level, then, you know, filed within the county. So, again, when I say on the record, it has to be recorded in the deed book somewhere. And then set up your status with the IRS so that they know who the executor of the estate is, so that when they start receiving paperwork, should we have to send them paperwork, they will be ready to receive it.
Okay. Now, that information is very, very important, because what he's talking about is administrative procedure, and these are some of the things. There are other things that you can do as well. But let's bring this closer to home. You got a loved one in prison, and what you want to do is to send them the signature portions of what documents that you're going to need to get notarized and filed in a lot of cases, and have them place their signature on the X's and mail it back to you, and then you can attach it to the documents you need to attach it to, get it notarized and set up, and so you can build this foundation up, so when you get ready to go in there to request that the your loved one is released, everything is in place, the signatures are in place, the documents are in place, everything is in place. Now, we're going to take this thing a little bit further, and we're going to go a little bit deeper into different procedures and some of the most essential information that we need to understand as we go along, which will be laying the framework for the groundwork. And for those of you who are new to this here, if you want to get my new free article, you can now go to tahaka53@hotmail.com. Just send me a note, say, Tahaka, send me the free articles, and I get it to you. That's tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll go ahead and get that to you, okay? So let us proceed. Now, keep in mind, if you all got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand, and I'll recognize that, and we'll get you on here, okay? But let's continue.
Greetings, and welcome to thctrust.org. Briefly, I want to talk about status and standing, and then I want to go into some ways that you can establish your status and your standing. The reason I decided to speak about this topic is because I get a lot of questions, you know, when people become aware that something is wrong and they become aware that their rights are being violated, and, you know, they start to learn and hear about the straw man. And then some people that have just been in different movements for long periods of time, but they still, you know, they hear so much information, but they don't know where to start or what direction to go in. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, how can I become sovereign, or how can I become indigenous, or how can I take myself out the system? And, you know, first thing I want to say is that sovereignty is a state of being. It's not one document or one thing that you can do that's going to establish yourself as being sovereign and make everyone aware and recognize it and immediately say, hey, we're going to leave this guy alone because he's a sovereign. It's a lifestyle and it's a way of being. However, I do want to read over a document that I wrote that is going to address the root concern of what people are trying to get to. At least I feel that's what they want to know when they ask me the questions, you know, how can I become sovereign or take myself out the system or whatever. Now, what I'm going to discuss can be found on the website that I'm currently administering. So, and please overlook some things because it is under construction. You know, I am the first trustee as well as the administrator. So it is going to be a membership site, by the way. It's not membership right now. So you're free to go there and browse around. Click the topics menu. There's a lot of information that I've been uploading, and I will be uploading more information. And I also want you to encourage you to help support what we're trying to do at thctrust.org. And you can support by simply making a donation. And right now, if you click under the new products link, you will find a book that we've produced. And this book tells you how to acquire abandoned and vacant properties in a very seamless, straightforward, easy method. You don't have to be a guru. You don't have to be a sovereign master. And this process can be done in probably maybe 6 to 8 weeks. So if you're living with someone that you don't want to be living with, or if you, you know, maybe you need another form of employment, you can use the process that we teach in this guide to acquire these abandoned, vacant, foreclosed homes and rent them out and maybe help your community and help yourself. So make sure you click on the new products page. You can check that out. We're only asking for, I think it's what, $20, $25. It's an excellent book. It has all the forms and everything you need. And as a matter of fact, when I finish this video, I think I'm going to do another video and pretty much tell you the process of exactly what is written in the book. However, it would benefit you to buy the book because, you know, the process involves performing work on a vacant property, filing a lien, and foreclosing on your lien. It'll benefit you to purchase the book because I've spent many, many hours and I've completed template documents for every single thing that you need to do, and that's all in the book. But anyways, let me get to the subject of what I wanted to discuss, which is establishing your status in a kind of step-by-step method. So listen closely, and the documents that I'm going to be discussing, you can get those documents for free, the templates that I've provided, and they are also on thctrust.org. If you click under the link that says Foundation and then the link that says Establishing Your Status. So I'm just going to read pretty much from this document, and I'll put my little 2 cents in where I think it's necessary. Essential steps to establishing your status. There is a minimum of 3 key documents one needs to properly establish his status as the executor and heir to the land of his estate. After reading and completing the documents attached, you will have established your status in writing and for the record. This article does not touch on the extent of the protections and remedies that lay within these documents when properly used. However, with certainty, these documents used together or similar documents serving these specific purposes will be the foundation to protect you and enforce your rights in almost any process or situation, whether you are bringing the claim or avoiding a claim. Okay, so the first document and the first thing of necessity, excuse me, is that you file a will. So the need for a will. The will is symbiotic in nature. On a spiritual level, it represents the evolution of a man in his spiritual ascension, whereas now the man is aware of himself outside of the vessel and therefore desires to move and navigate the vessel. The man's will serves to rebut the presumption that the man is lost at sea and therefore establishes to the world his desire for his vessel, which is to be protected and unimpeded. The same way a captain of a ship uses a steering wheel may be figuratively applied to the way in which we use our will to make our intention known. Through the will, the intentions of the navigator will manifest. Or you may say, through the will, the intentions of the grantor will manifest. As some of you already know, the will serves as a trust agreement in the public. And when I say the public, I'm talking about the commercial world or the contract world. Therefore, it is important that you express who the executor is so that in matters regarding your estate, and when I say estate, I'm talking about your body, your rights, your inheritance, your assets, everything that's the essence of what you possess here on the earth. That's your estate. But so in matters regarding the estate, let me read that again. Therefore, it is important that you expressed who the executor is so that in matters regarding your estate, everyone else, including state officials, awaringly become trustees If there is no will on file for the man's vessel, one may assume that the vessel is empty and take possession of the vessel by use of the foreign law, the contract law. Let's see here. I'm going to finish reading through this, and I'm going to expound on it some more with some personal words. Although what is taking place may seem unfair, everything is happening in accordance with the divine law, including the contract law. You know, what I'm basically saying is when things seem like they're unfair and we are being shifted around and pushed to and fro without any say, it is happening in accordance with the divine law. Now, the law of the sea, the contract law and the commercial system, you know, that is also a part of the divine law. It's just like everything else. There's a structure to everything. So, you know, I'm one to believe that a lot of what happens because of our lack of knowledge. But let me continue with the read. Every living man or woman should have their intentions made known in the form of a will. The will, in essence, serves the similar purpose of an affidavit or a bill. An affidavit is a charging instrument, and so is your will. The will of the testator, however, seems to be the highest ranking indenture, carrying more weight than an affidavit, even more weight than a sovereign declaration. It makes sense to be this way, as denying one's right to self-determination is a grave human rights violation that extends beyond the jurisdiction of the three-dimensional world.
Okay, we're going on to the next plug, but before I do, I see we have someone with their hands raised, and I'm going to go ahead and open up that line. Area code 336. Could you tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment? Okay, can you? What's your question, brother? Area code 336. Okay. All right, well, let's go on to our second plug. And let's
it is my opinion that we are perishing of, that's supposed to say, for our lack of knowledge, or basically for ignorance. Although I wish the pirates would release the slaves from the house of bondage, it is not their nature, as they require a vessel to feed upon and live through. It is our duty to free our own minds. If a claim is brought against the estate, the will is the law. If your will is appropriately foul, the court is required to notify the executor of the estate that a claim has been made against the estate, thereby affording the executor sufficient time to resolve the matter in accordance with the intentions of the estate. The testator who wrote the what is most important in the will is the rules of administration. The administration section should establish or adopt a procedure for adjudication and making claims against the estate. I encourage you to include your nation's court system or annex and attach the rules and guidelines governing the administrative process of which the executor will appropriately recognize and respond to. This is addressed in the same manner such as a court posts its local rules. One may also consider accepting for value and annexing to the will any Bill of Rights or human rights instruments such as UN Resolution 61-178, Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Doing this puts in place a charging instrument, allowing the measure to be set whereby any trustee denying you due process may be held liable and charged. Basically, you can charge them based off of that instrument. Now we just kind of went over the will, which I believe is the first important document for establishing your status. And although I read over this, I just want to kind of reiterate some things and point out some things that you can understand. Now, many of us are familiar with straw men and things of the such. Now, the straw man is really a trust, but when that trust is being subject to some type of proceeding, whether criminal or civil, you need to look at the, this is kind of a hard concept for me to explain, but although these straw man accounts are trusts, when they become subjects of a court system or a proceeding, they are now in a state. And technically, in a state, a state is kind of, how can I say it? It's a state of being, if you will. So you can look at it like the estate of your trust. Like, what is the status of your trust? This is kind of a better way to look at it. But the point that I wanted to make is that whenever you're facing a criminal or civil proceeding, what is occurring is that someone is trying to adjudicate a claim against your estate. Somebody is claiming that they have been damaged, and they're bringing the claim against your estate, expecting to be compensated. So the reason why you want to have a will, well, let's think about it like this. Most people don't have a will on file. And now when you hear the term will, don't only think of it as the document. Think of it about, you know, what is a will? A will is your intentions, what you're putting forth, what your desires is, right? The same way a corporation has a corporate charter, or the same way a state has a constitution, is the same way that your SESTA-K trust should have a will or an intention on file, because at some level it's being construed to be a corporation. And if you have no declaratory document establishing the intent or the rules and the regulations, then that's what allows the judge or another public trustee to assume the role as the administrator or the executor for your estate, because they say, hey, I'm a public trustee and I can assume this duty because, you know, the office is currently vacant and not occupied. You know, you can just Google around, not even in the sovereignty or secure party movement. The most important, one of the most important things that you're going to find in every will is the will establishes the executor. And the, you know, and will also establish, an executor is pretty much the chief administrator over the affairs of the estate. And he can appoint fiduciaries and trustees, and he can instruct them what to do. And this is not something that has just got, you know, this is not something that was just made up in a secured party or the creditor movement. This is well established in law and in the legal system. So it would very much benefit you to provide a will solely for the purpose of establishing who the executor is, because this will allow you to have a stronger standing in court, because now they have to recognize that. You know, if you have a will on file and it's a matter of public record, and there's somebody trying to adjudicate a claim against you, say let's say in like a criminal matter, well, now you can pull that file and you can file that into the case, and it will become a matter of the record of who the executor of the estate is. Now you're putting the public trustee in a awkward position. And when I say public trustee, I'm talking about a judge or a magistrate or whoever it is sitting in that role, because they are 100% very much aware. Now, I'm talking from experience here. I'm talking from assisting people that have used this type of remedy. You put them in a very uncomfortable position, and you can actually see frustration about them, because they lose their power and they lose their authority once they know that in writing and certified by affidavit and recognized and acknowledged by their court that there is an executor for the estate. Now, something else I wanted, you know, I touched on it also in this article, is the administration section of the estate. That discusses what the intention is or what the will is for how administration and adjudication should take place against the estate. Testator's will. Now, a will is not just a mere affidavit. You know, from my studies, the will is probably the highest form of a declaration that there is. And you have to look at it as such, because, again, if you're denying someone to have an intention or a will, then you may as well come out and say, hey, you're just a slave, which is against all kind of law. Enforced contracts, being forced to comply with a contract that's one-sided or that you do not agree to or that you do not consent to is basically the definition of slavery, right? So denying somebody the opportunity to manifest their will is serious. Now, as a result of that, I personally believe that is a lot of reason why people always say, go to an attorney to file your will. And it's been my experience that a lot of attorneys take your sovereign control of your estate out of your will by the verbiage and the words that they use. So I think you would be better served to do your research and file your own will. And then not only that, a lot of attorneys will not put your will into the record. They will hold it at their office or they will hold it in a safe somewhere and wait until your physical body is off of this earth before they file your intention. So to me, it seems like it's a counterproductive system that's set up in a way to keep you in ignorance and to give you no control over your vessel and to wait until you pass this world and then to reveal what should have been given to you while you were here. It's really something to think about. But anyways, I guess because this video has went on long enough, I would just make this the first part, and I'm going to discuss all three of these documents that I think you need to establish your status, and I'm also going to discuss the fourth step, which is not necessarily a document, but something that you may also want to consider. And you just got to bear with me. You may not understand how all these things work, but if you go to the site and you read, and again, that's under the foundation and the establishing your status step by step, you can read and you can click and download these documents. They're templates, so make sure you make them personal. And when you get through all of these, you'll see how they work together. So in the next video, I'm going to talk about the next document, which is your letter of executorship, which should occur after you file the will, and it should correspond with what's written in the will. Thank you for watching, and make sure you visit www.thctrust.org and continue to visit. Greetings. Welcome to thctrust.org. Now, in this video, I'm going to talk about establishing the executor, which is something that occurs in the will. And if you've downloaded the template will, you'll see how that is established in there. Now, I'm not going to spend too much time going into this because there's more than enough information. I would recommend you visit thctrust.org, and I will have some links to videos where individuals talk about the role of the executor of the estate. You can also look up some videos by Dean Clifford, and I believe he talks about the role of the executor. And more importantly, you can go to Google and Google executor for an estate. And I really think that's where you will find some of the best information because, no, it's not written from the perspective of secured parties and indigenous people and Americans in the Republic and things like that. But the information doesn't change. The executor's role is the same, which is to collect the assets of the estate, to administer the affairs of the estate, to pay the debts of the estate. And that kind of is consistent with the whole concept of secure party creditor. The executor is there to settle the claims against the estate, the same way that the secure party creditor was used to indemnify the Cesta K Trust or the straw man, if you will. So, and there's also, you can Google David Clarence. He has some videos. I'm not videos. I believe there's some talk shows that talk about the role of the executor and some of the successes that they've had. The executor letter is a letter that you may want to use along with your letter of indigenous or sovereign standing or your letter establishing your nationality or your letter establishing your as a secure party creditor or an American in the Republic, whatever type of affidavit of that identifies who you are outside of being a United States citizen is probably beneficial to use together with the letter of executorship to really certify and establish your standing. But again, the executor is appointed in the will, and typically if you are successful filing your will where they file wills in your at your county level, what will happen is they will issue a letter from the court establishing who the named executor was in the will. Now, this is very powerful if you can get that from the court with their seal on it. But even if you can't, you can produce your own, and you can sign it in front of a notary and get it authenticated and witnessed, et cetera, et cetera. Now, on that note, I personally, because I am aware that there's a difference between, you know, the name means nothing. Some people feel uncomfortable about having a will for their all capital letter name and then establishing an executor in uppercase or lowercase or however form you do it that has the similar name. I don't have a problem with that. You know, that's the way I've done mine. But if you have a problem with that and you don't think you can effectively navigate using that method, then appoint somebody else that you trust. Now, I will tell you this. Doing it the first way I mentioned, by being your own executor, for lack of better terms, you may run into some problems. I've ran into some serious problems trying to get certain things filed that way. And, you know, it just depends. Every place is different. You might be able to do it seamlessly. You might have some problems. And if you do have problems, technically you can remove those problems if you have the know-how and if you have the time. But, you know, right now that'll just be something that you have to figure out. If you get jammed up in a specific area, perhaps you can send us an email and we can give you some ideas. Now, it is probably the most grave human rights violation to deny someone the opportunity to file a will under any circumstances. But in this day and age, don't be surprised, it may happen. So if that does happen to you, what's most important is you, if you can't get your will in the probate court or the county clerk, which is probably usually where it should be filed, then don't hesitate to go file it in the district, which I believe they have a $39 miscellaneous filing fee. And from my experience, they don't scrutinize and they don't prevent you from filing anything at the federal level. So look at your federal courts and your district courts to have your will put on the record if you cannot get it filed where it's supposed to be filed. Now, I'm going to go ahead back into reading this document, see if I have any good information here. Well, actually, you know what? I'm not going to go into reading this document because, you know, there's so much information about the role of the executor that I'm not going to put my two cents on it. So I say research it yourself. What I have provided at thctrust.org is I provided a template executor letter for your usage. This letter has been written very, very close to the same format that's used by the Department of the Navy for their official military correspondence. And the individual that drafted up that letter was actually, he was actually in the military and worked in administration, and he's very familiar with how they do things. So that's another gift from thctrust.org to you. And I guess that'll pretty much be it. Let me see if there's anything important that I'm missing in here. I'm scrolling through this document. Okay, well, there you go. Let me go ahead and read this real quick. Essentially, your executive letter will be used before you begin or initiate any process or proceeding with a public official or trustee. This is because you're letting them know, hey, you know, say if you have a matter that you're trying to get resolved, as soon as you, whoever, whatever public trustee is involved, whether it's Secretary of State or, you know, a sheriff or whoever it is, as soon as they receive your letter, your executor letter, then that establishes who the executor is of this particular matter and of your estate, thereby forcing them into the role of public official, you know, forcing them into the role of fiduciary or trustee. Now, I also want to encourage you to consider modifying and updating the executor letter that we provided. Everything you need to make it personal. You need to make it your own. And there's a section under the executor letter that specifically talks about the role of trustees and fiduciaries. So you can beef that up and make it personal. So for whatever you want to convey to public trustees, as relates to your estate and your status, you can add into that letter. Now, it's really important to make all these letters, whether it's your will or your letter of executorship or the next one that we're going to talk about, which is your sovereign or national declaration. It's important that you have those recorded and that they are a matter of public record. Okay? And maybe we'll go into that later, but for right now, just understand that it's not just important to just have these documents certified for yourself in your own personal files, which you should. They also should be a matter of public record. Because, as I said before, affidavits, which essentially is what your executor letter and your sovereign and national declaration, those are all affidavits. They're charging instruments, but you can't hold someone liable if the information wasn't made known to them. So, again, you have to put that in the public. All right, so the executor letter can be found at thctrust.org under the foundation menu. The link for establishing your status, you can read through that and you can find the will in the executor letter. Also, again, I want to encourage you to help support what we're doing here. And let me tell you where we're trying to get to, what at least my major focus and what I really want to dedicate a large portion of the website and our organization to, and that is getting people out of jail, getting people out of prison, because there's a lot of people in there for bogus, petty, statutory crimes that are not really crimes at all, and they're doing a lot of time and they don't need to be there, and it's just the time, you know, it's the time to think about somebody else and not think about yourself. So you can be out spending your money on other things, but, you know, it would benefit us and it would benefit you to donate to thctrust.org. And you can do that by looking under our products menu. Right now we only have one product, and that product is, again, showing you how to take possession of an abandoned or vacant house. Step-by-step method, and I've provided all the legwork for you. So the last document that I think is critical and essential in establishing your status is your sovereign or indigenous declaration, your documents of nationalization. Now, it doesn't matter. Everybody, you know, you're your own. You declare who you are. Now, I have a template on this website for a withdrawal or removal of United States citizenship and a declaration of sovereign and indigenous standing. I highly advise that you don't use that document unless you do a lot of reading about it or unless you feel that it is personal to who you are, because, you know, if you use that document, you're not a United States citizen, okay? So, and you don't have to use that document. The only reason I feel that you should have some type of declaration on file is because when you establish the executor for the estate or, you know, for the Sesta K Trust, now you need to give the executor status as being outside and not subject to the jurisdiction of the commercial system. So I hope you see how those documents work together. So say, for example, somebody was filing a criminal procedure against your estate. Well, on one level, you can consider filing the will into the record jacket of that case, but you can consider removing the case, doing a notice of removal and removing it to the probate court, because we are aware that they're trying to adjudicate a claim against your estate and you have the will on file. So you can consider removing it to the probate court and filing into the record jacket, and this is something that you always want to do. If you have your established, if you have your status established, and somebody's bringing a claim against you, whether civil or criminal, the first thing you need to do is file into the record jacket of that matter your status, which should include your letter of executorship and your sovereign declaration. Those two things should be there. And again, you know, there's templates for all this on the site, thctrust.org. And you can also read, I'm just going to kind of cut this here because I think everything else you can find out on your own, or you can email me for any questions, and that's coaching@thctrust.org. But once you have those two letters, the last step that I discuss on this site is establishing your estate with the IRS, and that's pretty much for enforcement and compliance. A lot of times, even though you have your status straight, somebody will try to judge and say, well, this person doesn't really know what they're doing. Well, if you have your foundation set up with the IRS appropriately, then you can use the IRS for your enforcement when someone's trying to trespass on your estate. And so, and that doesn't matter whether it's judges or sheriff, nobody is immune. Nobody is immune in the private, and that's why enforcement is so important, and it's one of the things that we're really going to be harping on and working on at thctrust.org. And hence, because of our knowledge about enforcement, that's what puts us in a good position to pursue releasing people from, or pursue the studies for releasing individuals from jail, prison, 10-year sentences, 20-year sentences. It does not matter. If the person, and especially if you know someone that is locked up right now, they don't deserve to be locked up for, you know, for whatever reason, especially if they're somewhat familiar with this technology, then you need to stay tuned and you need to help support our organization so we can get the information out there and we can establish a work group and a study session to really affect some remedies in this area. So thanks for watching. Make sure you visit the site, and you can email us at coaching@thctrust.org. We also offer coaching and debt settlements and criminal proceedings. We have a writing service. Email us to inquire. And thank you again for watching.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, keep in mind that everything that you heard here tonight is in Tarkus Library, along with all the documentation that you'll need to carry this thing out from start to finish. We're going to have to take a little quick break, and we'll be right back. So if you got questions and comments, go ahead and prepare to raise your hand. We're going to run this little musical number, and then I'll come right back, and we can get into what to say when you actually get in the courtroom. We're going to try to prevent even getting in there, but if you find yourself down there, you need to know how to handle yourself when you get there. So we'll be back with that.
Feel so bad. Feel like a ball game on a rainy day. I tell you, I feel so bad. Feel like a ball. Shake my head and walk away. Walk away. Sometimes I wanna stay here. Then again I wanna leave. Sometimes I wanna leave here. Then again I wanna stay. Make my mind up. I shake my head and
Okay, Moses, we're back, and we're going to go straight on into how to handle yourself inside that courtroom if you find yourself there on the floor. So y'all pay attention, and don't forget, you can always listen to this broadcast over and over. But the best thing to do is contact me in regards to the library, because in there you can stop, pause, rewind until you write this stuff down and go and get what you need to get. And fill it out and go and get it executed and place it where it need to be placed at, so you can actually make progress with this stuff. Now, in order to access that library, just simply call me, Tahaka Manael Bey, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll get you in there. And as far as those free articles go, just send me an email. Just say, well, Tahaka, just send me those free articles that you're talking about. And send that request to tahaka53@hotmail.com, okay? And we'll rush that right on to you.
United States Code, Title 18, and this is Part 3, Chapter 306, Subsection 4108. I'm going to read it to you how most people read it, okay? I'm going to take off my glasses so I can read it good. Prior to the transfer of an offender to the United States, the fact that the offender consents to such transfer and that such consent is voluntary and with full knowledge of the consequences thereof shall be verified in the country in which the sentence was imposed by a United States magistrate judge or by a citizen specifically designated by a judge of the United States as defined in Section 451 of Title 28, United States Code. The designation of a citizen who is an employee or officer or of a department or agency of the United States shall be with the approval of the head of that department or agency. B. The verifying officer shall inquire of the offender whether he understands and agrees that the transfer will be subject to the following conditions.
Uh-huh.
When you read, does anybody understand that?
No.
Okay, so let me tell you who wrote that. A lawyer wrote that, and they wrote it in terminology that we can't understand. And so we don't want to sound stupid, so the judge says, do you understand that? What do you say?
Yes, no.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, that's what we do. I mean, you go to court. This is what they're wrapping everybody under their jurisdiction. This is Title 18. I said this to a judge. I said, are you referring to Title 18, Part 3, Subsection 4108? And the judge goes, what are you referring to? And I go, the consent. Because he said, do you understand that you're waiving your rights? And I said, no, I don't understand that. Why would I do that? I want all the rights I can possibly get in this court. I said, are you referring to Title 18? And he looked at me without blinking and he goes, what part? Well, there's at least 306 parts, chapters, and there's... So here's what I know. In the U.S. Code, under definitions, it says the United States, definition of the United States, is a corporation. Okay? It doesn't say a government. It says a corporation. So now that we know a corporation, if we look up the word corporation, has anyone ever looked up a corporation? They have stockholders. That's the big part. They also have a board of directors. And the and the corporation is run and operated by the board of directors. So if the United States is in fact a corporation, I don't want to step on anybody's toes if you're here for a first time and you're new, okay? Just do some investigation. So here's what I did. It says, are you with me? Okay, let's look up the definitions of the word in this code. And remember, this is just a code. So I didn't get to do code, but if you were in the Boy Scout, you have a code of honor, right? If you break the code of honor, can you go to jail?
No.
Why? Because it's not a law, right? Okay, codes are for a group of people that agree to abide or behave in a manner that's consistent with a code. Okay, so remember, the U.S., they're giving us notice. This is just a code. This is not law. So if you guys act like you're under this code, you're going to pay the fine for breaking this code. Okay, so I use the Electric Law website, and the reason why I do Electric Law is because it has the terminologies that attorneys and judges use. So it's really good to use that. But I also like the Black's Law Dictionary. So we're going to start all over with 4108, verification of consent of offender to transfer to the United States. Okay? If you look at, we already went over the United States. Now, some people think the United States is exactly the same thing as the United States of America with different capitals. You're wrong. It's much different. America is not the same thing as the United States, nor is North America the same thing as America. Okay? I mean, when you say North America, we're talking about Mexico, America, and Canada. Okay, now, I just took the words. So it says prior to the transfer. So let's look up the word transfer. So I look up the word transfer. I skipped the part right there where it says, okay, first is the United States. The same place or thing as the United States of America. And to some it is. But to the watchful eye, it's two separate and distinct places far away from each other, yet they're so close they're literally on top of each other. When you walk into the court, you are actually walking into a foreign country. The court's goal is to obtain your consent before it moves forward and transfers your person to their country or their state. Like every state has its border, we need to know where the borders are. We need to know where the borders are for the court, okay? And the borders are realistically in the words you speak, the way you conduct yourself, and the mannerisms in which you treat the judge, okay? If you act like a slave, they're going to treat you like one. If you act with responsibility and like you are not a slave and you're not a citizen and there's no contract in place, then he is going to treat you accordingly, okay? So the word transfer, the act by which the owner of a thing delivers it to another person with the intent of passing the rights which he has in it to the latter. Anybody hear that? I'm going to transfer my rights to the judge, okay? And once I do that, if I had the right to put me in jail, he now has the right to put me in jail. Or he has the right to impose a fine or levy on me. Okay, now if I don't transfer that right to a corporation, the corporation comes from the word corpse, it means it's dead. Okay, that corpse cannot do anything without me moving it. By me giving him transfer, by transferring something to him, he now has it. So this is what they're looking to do. They're trying to transfer your rights to them. They have to do it every time you walk in. They can't do it once and it's good for the rest of your life. Every time. Okay, to transfer means to change. For example, one may transfer a legacy, and then there's these three, first, second, and third things. The third one is the most important. It says, by the change of the person who has bound to pay the legacy, as I direct the sum of $100 which I directed should be charged upon my house, which means a state which I gave to quorum, shall be paid by my executors. Okay, so what that, if you understand what that says that I can tell Jim to pay my bill.
I like that.
The judge, realistically, is the trustee. The executors, okay, took our birth certificates, they funded the nation, and now we are the sponsor of the credit. We are the sponsor why the corporation is able to operate, is because of our signature and because of what our value is. Okay, so the offender. Now, this is if this gets too deep and if I get way off in the deep end, I'm sorry. We'll take a break or we'll just stop. But when you get pulled over by a highway patrolman, you're an offender. At some point, you show up for your first hearing and now you're the defendant. How did they do that? It's a magic wand. I'm serious.
I get it.
If you guys have ever been, pulled over, it says you have committed offense. You're an offender and you sign. Without committing, without signing for guilt, you're going to appear. Okay, well, if you sign that document, you entered a contract. It's a contract because there's two people on it. And it's actually a negotiable bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It means you signed something to be paid for in advance. Now, without saying too much about this, you need to take care of that ticket within 3 days. If you don't, you're turned into a defendant. I'm going to go into some of the stuff, what it says in Title 18 in the dictionary. It talks about Title 18. Because you don't come in early enough, they treat you like a juvenile delinquent. And that's what they call you in Title 18. Because you can't handle your affairs, we're going to be your mom and dad for you. And we're going to take care of this for you. Okay, so offender. A person who has been convicted of an offense or has been adjudicated or adjudged to have committed an act of juvenile delinquency, and it specifically says 18 U.S.C. And that's what we're checking out.
Where's this definition, Bill?
The definition is electric law.
Electric law?
Yeah, electric law. And it's, if you look up electric law on the internet, it'll show you that. So this is, I'm going to go over the same thing again. I believe that we have 3 days to settle all disputes on the private side before it is brought to the public side. When we don't, we have literally changed from an offender to a defendant. Our dishonor has moved the thing to default, and it says the court sees us as a juvenile delinquent. We don't show up and settle the issues without being called to by a court summons 20 to 30 days later. That makes us a defender now. So if you look up the word consent, consent is either express or implied. Express, when it is given viva voice, out of your mouth, or in writing. Implied, when it is manifested by signs, actions, or facts, or by inactive or silent, which raise a presumption that the consent has been given. An agreement to something proposed and differs from assent. Consent supposes a physical power to act, a moral power of acting, and a serious, determined, and free use of these powers. So they're saying again that we're giving the power to the judge to do to us what we should have done to him. Okay. Voluntary. I mean, these are all cool words. Now, these are all these words in the very front, remember? Prior to a transfer of an offender to the United States, the fact that the offender consents to such transfer and that such consent is voluntary and with full knowledge of the consequences. Okay. Now, what was really funny is when I asked this one judge about Title 18, he said, that's referring to a foreign country. I said, really? Can I read that to you? Because I didn't see the word foreign country in there anywhere. It doesn't say foreign country anywhere, does it? Okay, knowledge. Knowledge, information as to a matter or fact. Many acts are perfectly innocent when the party performing them is not aware of certain circumstances attending them. For example, someone may pass a counterfeit note and be criminally guiltless if they did not know it was counterfeit. Or someone may receive stolen goods if they were not aware of the fact that they were stolen. In these types of cases, it is the guilty knowledge or center which makes the crime. So the judge says, do you have knowledge? Do you understand what you did? And when you say yes,
bam,
you're saying that you understand that you broke a law. And now you've lied. That's the worst thing, because you didn't break a law when you were speeding. You violated a code. And the code is in an act. We went over this, I think, 2 weeks ago. The Department of Motor Vehicles Act, which is what he was saying, read today. They were letting the DPS know. The Motor Vehicle Act was passed unanimously by whoever, okay? The word act, if you go to see your kids at a school play, they're acting, right? When you go there, you can tell they're acting because they all have on costumes and they're playing parts. Okay, so when you get pulled over by a highway patrolman, He's in a car that's all painted up, so you know he's part of an act. He walks up in a costume, hat, and stripes on his pants. If they wore that out to dinner, not being a cop, okay, they just wore that out, they'd be in trouble. Okay, so after he gives you a ticket, now he wants you to participate in an act, and the act is you broke a code, and we want you to come down to our playground. It's like a basketball court. That's why we call it a court, because we're going to play a game on it, and there's going to be someone there acting like a judge, and he's in his costume. He has a black robe on. And the suit against you, we're letting you know it's really not a suit. It's just that the attorney is wearing a suit. He's going to be there. And there's a bailiff dressed up in a bailiff's costume. And he's got some costume jewelry on called a gun and a badge and some handcuffs. Okay, I even know a bailiff who told me that he had plastic handcuffs because they were heavy. And he was lightening up his belt. He didn't have any bullets in his clips because he never needed them. He's in a real quiet town, so he had all this stuff on. He had it all done up in plastic because it was too heavy to carry around every day. He had all this stuff under his desk so he could get to it if he needed to. It's all an act. And when we agree to play in the act, it comes with some severe consequences. Consequence. That's the next one. You understand the consequences? Remember what it says in there? Full knowledge of the consequences. And we say, yeah, we have full knowledge of the consequences. I could go to jail and he'll let me off, which is maybe a fine. I'll try not to speed anymore. I'll get my radar detector working better. The effect, result, or outcome of something occurring earlier. That's a consequence. The accident was a consequence of reckless driving. Now, look at number two. An act or instance of following something as an effect, result, or outcome. An act. They tell you. Consequence has something to do with Title 18. It's an act. In general, the law of California declares that everyone is responsible for an injury occasioned to another by his want of ordinary care. I can't even tell you what that means, okay? But that is a brutal, brutal thing when you understand what I just read, if you're a secured party creditor. Okay? Do you hear me? I'm going to read it one more time so you guys understand that. In general, the law of California declares, and this is in 1872, and it's never been overturned, that everyone is responsible for an injury occasioned to another by his want of ordinary care or skill in the management of his property or person. So how many people here are a person? Raise your hand. How many people have a person? All right. We're learning. See? This is what it takes. I got to say that I hang around some people that are so far beyond us here that they don't come to these meetings because they're flying like in the Matrix. They're flying everywhere. Okay? We're still trying to run to the phone to get out. You know? Nah. It's like a phone to your lawyer. Help me! Help! And he's just flying in and out. He's just having these guys that I run around with. They understand all this stuff. So what I thought I'd do tonight with all this stuff, just so I touch on it one more time, is when you look at something, read what the words mean, because I did not understand what any of these words realistically meant, and yet I was agreeing to the terms of them. So we get on to verification, because it has to be verified after you consent willingly. Okay. Verification. Whenever new matter is introduced on either side, that's the defendant or the plaintiff, the plea must conclude with a verification or averment. Anybody heard the terminology negative averment? Verification or averment in order that the other party may have an opportunity of answering it. The usual verification of a plea containing matter of fact is in these words. And this he is ready to verify. So they say that. Now, how do you verify a negative statement that you can't answer correctly? That's how they ask you questions, so that you can't answer. If I said to Jim, how many times have you been caught cheating on your wife? What's your answer? None. So I say to him, great. So you're really good at cheating on your wife without her finding out. It doesn't matter how he answered. If he said one or two, there's no way to answer the question without being in the hot seat. Okay? So when they're verifying stuff, this is how they do it. They trick you. In one instance, however, new matter need not conclude with a verification because the pleader, and it says, and then the pleader may pray judgment without it. For example, when the matter pleaded is merely negative, the reason of it is evident. A negative requires no proof, and it would therefore be impertinent or nugatory for the pleader who pleads a negative matter to declare his readiness to prove it. Okay, so it says practice. The examination of the truth of a writing, the certificate that the writing is true. Okay, so how many times have you ever been to court and the attorney says, just for instance, Mr. Faust was pulled over on March 15th, 1983, speeding at 162 mile an hour on a motorcycle. When do we ever... objection. Is he going to take an oath before he starts testifying? Anybody ever done that? I have.
You have.
The judge says, would you raise your right hand? The cop looked at me. Looked at the judge and now he's got to swear that he's telling the truth. Okay? Now, if an attorney is there, can the attorney swear to the facts that he saw that the highway patrolman wrote the ticket for? He can't. That's secondhand knowledge. That's hearsay. So if the attorney won't raise his hand and he starts talking again, you go, Judge, tell him to shut up. He's blabbing and he's causing contempt of court because he is talking about something that he has not firsthand knowledge of. It's all hearsay. So if he's going to testify, he's going to have to sign under penalty of perjury that what he's saying is the absolute truth, and he's going to have to bring the proof here today. Not some paper that the highway patrolman said he saw you doing it. Okay? Because we'll get to the highway patrolman a little bit later. Because I'm not participating in the act, and I told him when he pulled me over. I told him his costume looked silly. All right. Now here's how the plaintiff need not verify the truth of the complaint. The offender only needs to be presumed, and his own consent will work. Okay? So here's how they get consent. All right? You stand up, you gave him consent.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down, y'all sit down, get consent, you're dead. Doesn't matter what you plead. It does not matter what you plead after that point. They never give you a plea of innocence. They give you a plea of guilty, not guilty, or no contest. All three of them are all confrontational. Every one of them. It doesn't matter. At that point, you're already done. If you agree to consent to a plea. Now, I'm not telling you all this so that you can go in and cause more confrontation. I got really good news at the end of this. Take off your hat. Costanza did really good. Excuse me. We got to bleep that out. I didn't mean to use your last name.
I don't care.
He don't care. He's Superman now. He's flying in and out of the court.
No, but not hardly.
Okay, well, the judge came in and said, take off your hat. And he said, if you can show me the rule in law and code, it says I have to take off the hat. I'll agree. And
I'll be more than happy to take off my hat.
I'll be more than happy to take off my hat. And the judge, there isn't one. Nowhere. So the judge says, well, I'd like for you to take off the hat. And he goes, what'll happen if I don't? And the judge looked down and goes, nothing. is that cool? I got to tell you. Now, here's what he was doing. The judge is just trying to get some consent there. That's all he's looking for. Okay? Now, that's one way to blatantly come in and get on the consent game. And I love it. I'm going to start wearing 4 or 5 hats. Okay. So, it's some cool stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's your name? I'll give you my name upon proof claim. Do you have a claim here? What's the name on your claim? What's your name, by the way? This one judge, he said, my name's Judge. I'm not going to give you his last name because he's really a good guy. He seems to be a good guy. So he says, I'm Judge Brown. And I go, really? Guy, your parents must have been incredible. They named you Judge before you were Judge. Did they know you were going to be a judge when you grew up? That's your first name, Judge? He's looking at me like... What's your first name? He says, my name here in this court is Judge Brown. He's not going to give me his first name. Well, if he doesn't have to give me his first name, do I have to give him mine?
No.
I don't. But he's not looking for my first name. He's looking for three names. I'm first, middle, and last. That's part of a contract. Three all together, remember? Okay. So I'm just giving you stuff that you can start rolling around in your mind. Now, I'm not saying all this stuff so that we can go to court and be confrontational, because that is not what this is about. This is about so that you understand what's going on when you get there, before you get there. Okay? And knowing what's going to happen before you get there, some stuff needs to happen 3 days before, or 3 days, within 3 days of the time you get there. Okay? Now, we get some really good, I get some really good battles that we have won in the three-day rule. Okay? So, if you guys want to get together with somebody here that's part of the assembly, we can point you in the right direction so you can start learning this stuff. Now, if you want to play in the Super Bowl and you want to win a traffic ticket like that, it makes a lot of sense to start practicing before you get there. Okay? One thing before you get to a court is you want to go see how all the players play on it and how good they are. So if you're really interested in doing some stuff, it's a good thing to go down and just see how a judge handles himself in the court. I went down to the biggest courthouse in Phoenix. And we went in there and sat down, and we have watched some court cases. When I go to my little town and I walk into the court now and I just kind of slide into the back, okay, because I've established myself there a little bit. I'm not bragging, okay? The first time I went to court there, I almost threw up on the table right there because I was so nervous about what I was saying. But now when I slide in, you can see the judge look over at me and he's, Bill, are you on the calendar today? He calls me Bill. Don't you love him? I'm not Mr. Faust anymore. Bill, are you on the calendar today? No, I'm just here to say hi and see how everybody's doing and just to observe. Carry on. And he goes, oh, okay. And you can see. When you're on a plantation, you can't talk to the slaves. But you guys have come into a federal free zone here, and we're talking to you like you're not a slave. So when you leave here, if you start acting like a slave, don't start using this stuff, being a slave, because if you're going to try and get in both, it doesn't work. And I will tell you that there's a lot of people that are upset about being slaves, but they don't want to move off the plantation. They just want better living conditions. So if you feel that way, that's okay. That's your right, and we stand behind you in that decision. But if you want to move off the plantation and start your own, just like starting any new business, it gets a little lean at first, okay? There's no one there to help you. You got to build your own house. You got to lay your crops down. You got to get your own horse. If you don't have a horse, you got to talk your wife into pulling that plow. Okay, one of the sentences in the verification process up here, it says that the sentence was imposed by the United States magistrate judge or by a citizen specifically designated by the judge of the United States. And if you look at that, magistrate judge, a judge of the United States are not the same thing. Okay, so when you show up there, you've got a judge that's actually trying to move you into his country, and he's going to do it via a ship, a vessel. And the vessel has, you know, the old warships that had the side railing and it had all the wooden poles coming up there and it had a bar across the top of it. And there's a little gate that opens so that you can climb on the ship. You can come through that gate. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
He's inviting you to come on in and contract with him. He's inviting you to come on over here on my ship, because if you come on my ship, my law is the law of the high seas. And once you're here, you're in big trouble. There ain't nothing you can do when you're on someone else's ship. So I'm saying all that because they're giving us notice. That bar right there is a very important part of consent. If you walk across that without establishing some boundaries or some rules for that judge to operate under, he's not going to operate under. You guys understanding all this stuff?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you don't, get together later on tonight and talk to somebody about that. Okay, the word judge here is used in two distinct positions. One is the United States magistrate judge, and one is the judge of the United States. It says it right in the U.S. Code. Yes, the judge quietly changes his robe of jurisdiction as he guides you quietly from the statutory law venue into an admiralty law venue. Admiralty law is a whole other animal. But in brief, it can only deal in or with contracts, expressed contracts or implied contracts. Remember when he said they've rescinded all their signatures off of all the contracts, and we need to be careful how we deal with those individuals. It didn't say persons, it said individuals. When I read that thing, it started popping out. Did it say U.S. citizens? We need to be careful how we treat these citizens. It said individuals. A person is a corporation. You're acting in the capacity of a corporation. And a corporation always falls underneath some other corporation. It has to. Because if you are a corporation in Arizona, you have an Arizona Corporation Commission number, right? Well, guess who all the states incorporated under? United States. So now you're nothing more than an employee. So if you were to walk into Walmart with sandals on and shorts, and you were having a drink, parking lot, maybe a refreshment, and you went in there to work and you clocked on and they saw you like that, what would the manager do? He'd say, you're out of here. 2 weeks off without pay. Don't ever come in here without safety toe shoes. You can't wear shorts in here. And you definitely can't be drinking in the parking lot before you come in here. And if you do it again, you have had it. In fact, we're going to go ahead and fine you. 2 weeks, no pay. Now, what if I am not an employee of Walmart, and I'm out in the parking lot, and I have a swig, and I walk in with my shorts and sandals, and I walk over to the alcohol aisle, and I pick up alcohol, or I pick up some new swim shorts, because these are a little dirty, and I walk back up there, and they see me. What are they going to say to me? Nothing.
Paper or plastic?
Paper or plastic. The reason is because I'm not an employee. I'm not a citizen of that act. That code doesn't apply to me. With that comes responsibility. Okay, can't be drinking and driving out in the parking lot. I can't be offending my neighbor while I'm in the court. I mean, I'm in the store, and I need to wait my turn in line. I need to be respectful. I need to uphold even the other slaves that are in there. Excuse me, citizens. I need to be respectful to them, because just because they don't know does not mean that they're not equal with me. So, shall be verified in the country in which the sentence was imposed. So the word country. The word country is notice to us that we are about to leave the republic and enter into a foreign country. It is a key word to their jurisdiction. They must establish a boundary and give notice before we board their vessel and enter a contest to their commercial rules. It is well known that their country is associated with a bar, or the British Accredited Registry, or, you guessed it, England. It seems that we Americans are still under the rule if they can establish consent. And they usually get it every time by voluntary consent. So this is the way I study. When you look up understand, the word understand, if you split it up and turn it backwards, it means to stand under. And that's okay. I stand under God's laws. I stand under God. Okay, He's the Redeemer. He's paid all for all my sins. And all I have to do is consent to the forgiveness. And the word forgiveness weighs really heavy in a court. Okay? When you ask for forgiveness, it's a whole different animal there. So I'm telling you all this stuff because if we learn every word that we say and we start changing our phrasing, we can start living. Okay? I mean, we can actually live instead of
exist
in fear. So, I got to tell you, if everyone today that received a citation for violating an act in Coconino County went to court and just tried part of this, there's probably, how many tickets wrote today? Got to be 10,000 tickets wrote. There has to be. If everybody just went and said, I don't consent to your jurisdiction, unless you can show me the law, which I violated, and the contract that's in place, and the notice that you gave me upon that contract. If that happened 10,000 times, the next time the judge showed up in court, he'd say, oh man, we're going to have to back off here. I mean, we got 10,000 yesterday, we got 10,000 tomorrow, 10,000 the next day, now we got 30,000 cases that are all going to be put to hearings. We're going to have to back off. Tell them that we'll take $25 instead of $100. See if they'll pay $25 per cent. We got to make it less money so that they don't mind paying it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you following me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So is there any questions tonight before we stop?
The three-day thing you mentioned?
It seems to me that everything you're saying to the judge, he's going to get madder, and then when he finally finds you guilty, you're going to hang.
Okay. That's exactly how I felt, and that's a lot of the reason why we fold in fear, because we don't want to make it worse. I can tell you my own experience. I went in and started kind of getting with it with this judge, and he got out of line with me. Now, he's no better than me, right?
Right.
Don't we feel that way? He's no better. He puts on his pants just like me.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I believe that we're paying his salary.
Right.
I think what we were. So he was asking me questions, and I was trying to answer, and he interrupted me. And when he knew where I was going to answer something, he said, all right, you're not William Del Faust, we're just going to put out an arrest for his warrant. And he takes his paper like this, and he goes, put out a warrant for William Del Faust. And I said, well, if you're going to arrest him, I brought him here today. And I handed him my birth certificate, and I go, here you go. I surrender the defendant to the court. I would like some visitation. So the bailiff walks over and he takes that and he looks at it and he starts to walk over to the judge and they got eye contact and he goes, "Is that a birth certificate? Is that a birth certificate?" He goes, "Yes," and he goes, "Give it back to him." Now we're playing ball again, okay? The clerk of the court hands him back the paper and he goes, "Do you have a license to practice law?" I said, "I don't need one. I'm not practicing law. I'm an attorney in fact, not in fiction." Okay, so he knows that one. Big deal. He goes, "Do you have a bar card?" And I go, "That's nothing more than a membership card to a club, and I don't belong to that club either." He looks down and he says, "Okay, then how are you appearing here today?" Now, isn't that cool? He didn't say I was right on any of those things, but they're not an issue anymore at this point in the case. I said, "I'm appearing in my unlimited commercial capacity," and I asked the court to do the same. Because they're all limited liability corporations, and they know it. And what I just told him is that I've got a big bond. I'm all bonded up here. I'm ready to go. If I make a problem for you, I got some bonds in place to cover all my sins. I got some insurance.
Sure.
Okay. So when the judge sees that you know what's going on and you handle yourself accordingly and not with disrespect, I believe that the judges, a lot of them, look at you and go, "All right, this guy has been studying. This is good." I had one judge who was trying to get me out of his courtroom. He just could not wait to get to his verdict, and I was arguing with him about getting the verdict. I didn't want him to go there because I thought he was going to bind it over to a trial. And he dismissed the case immediately and walked out. So I'm telling you that depending on the judge and whether it's a court of record or not, you have a lot of power if you understand that and you handle yourself that way. Now, I'm not saying to go out and get a speeding ticket and go try this out. Okay. In fact, we just haven't done that in a while. I haven't gotten any tickets. I'm regrouping. My wife is really happy because there's not like when we used to go to the post office box, there'd be a letter in there from the attorney, state attorney, and I go, "Woohoo! The guy's an idiot, man! I can't believe him." And I go home, man. I open up that, man. I'm excited. I got some paperwork. She'd go, "What, are you sick? Are you kidding, man?" I mean, people open up a summons and they go, "Oh, golly." Because they don't know what a summons is. A summons is an offer to contract. That's all it is an offer. Okay. So, any other questions?
The three-day thing, you mentioned the three-day thing. So,
okay.
What do? You go into and talk to the clerk, or how do you?
Well, there's two sides in the court, okay? And without violating a trust issue here, there's a private side and there's a public side. The private side is where we need to handle all the issues before it's brought to the public. And we're guaranteed due process of law to exhaust all of our remedies on the private side before it's brought to the public. So if you show up within 3 days and you say, "I'm here to settle the issue," and you're a secured party creditor, you've made all the attempts to come through the door. They won't let you in the door. You've still knocked on the door. Okay? So you've met all the requirements up to that point. Now all you have to do is back up your case with fact. Now remember, actors are acting in fiction. You're the only one there that can act. I shouldn't say act. You're the only one there that is there in appearing in the real man form. You're the only one that can pick up a pen and cause something to happen. The judge can't even give you an order and enforce it on you unless you accept it. It's called the slider. Anyone ever seen the movie or the video? It's called YouTube, the website, but there's one on there called Bursting Bubbles of Government Deception.
Okay. Yeah.
I've watched it a bunch of times. Okay, it's called the slider. Now, I'm gonna try and contract with Jim here. I want to show you how this works in the court. There's an order here. Yeah. Just pretend you're a citizen.
Okay.
Okay. Order here from the judge. And the attorney won't ever hand anything to you. Watch. Go to court. He'll go like this. Order from the judge. Now watch this. The attorney's going in the corner of his eye. He goes, "Got him." He took it. Okay, we got a contract. And then he just goes on about, okay, we're going to hearing in a couple of days, or we got to pay the fine and whatever. You sit down, you talk to the bailiff, he's going to give you some more paperwork. And the slider, okay? So here's what you do. Jim, don't act like a slave. Okay, now here's a couple different ways you can handle this. Here's an order.
Hand it back to me.
Pick it up and hand it back to me. Watch this. Now, watch this contract. I got the contract now. He doesn't have it anymore. It's called the last guy holding the hot potato. Right? Now, if you understand your secure party creditors, you can accept this. Just like it is, you can accept it and settle it right then. The best thing to do is settle it with the highway patrolman. Okay? Accept it right away. Okay, now, this is what Winston Trout says. This is crazy. When they send you something in the mail, okay, first thing I do now is I open it up and I go, oh, they sent me a bill and they didn't send a check to pay for it. There's no check. That's crazy. Don't they know they're in dishonor? Law says if you bring an action, you also have to bring the remedy. Did you know that? That's the law. So there's no check. What do I do? I'm going to do my best to turn this into a check, and I'm going to return it right away so that they can get paid. Because with this big act that they got going on, there's a lot of costs involved, and I want to make sure that they can keep gas in those cars out there. Okay? That's being an honor. All right? Any other questions?
I had a question regarding when you go into court, they give you something, and you attempt to give it back to them, and they won't take it. I mean, you can't force somebody to take something.
Okay, they can't take it. Why? They're a corporation. What are they?
Dead. So how do you give it back? And how do you say, do you give it back?
You know? Pick up their hand. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, the proof of acceptance and brought back into the court, you can also take it around to the clerk of the court and ask the shipper to deliver the cargo to the proper port. That's the Bill of Lading Act. Yeah. They've got another act in there, of course. We can participate when we need to. Or you can just not accept it right there on the spot. I don't agree to that. You got any other offers? I don't like that offer. You got anything else? I'm going to tell you that the judge is going to notice what you're saying. I don't accept that. Or you can always conditionally accept it upon proof of something. Gordon Hall's got a great tape on YouTube. If you look up Gordon Hall, he knows just how to say, I conditionally accept all of it. If you can show me where in the law book that I have to accept it. Okay? There's no laws, you see. Since 1933, when they took the gold, all public laws were converted to public policy. So you cannot break a policy unless you are part of the policy. Any other questions?
So it's like an insurance policy, kind of.
That's right. Go ahead.
How about photo speeding tickets?
Okay. I'm not going to give you any advice. Okay? This is just how I would handle that.
Entertainment purposes only.
Yeah.
For entertainment purposes only. The law, the policy, okay, we're getting down to policy. Policy says that you have to be notified and you have to sign to appear. If you haven't agreed to that, there's no appearance necessary. I got a bunch of them. I don't want to play. I don't want to play that game. So I don't send them back. I just, it's kind of hard to find me. I mean, I've got a suite. It's about this big. It's got a number on it. And I get mail there. Sometimes they send the wrong mail there. They send a corporation's mail there, and I'm the real man, so I always send that back. Because if something comes in with a corporate name like Chevron or Walmart, my post office, what do you do with it? You write on there, not at this address. Return to sender, and you send it back without opening it. That's a polite thing to do, right? So if I get something to a corporate name that sounds a lot like my name, that's spelled in corporation print, I just say thank you very much, but there's no one here by that day. Are you guys following me? Okay. Go ahead.
Yes, you were talking about going on to the judge's ship. I know that the bar is there, but if you don't cross that bar, what can he do?
Well, if he tells you to cross that bar three times and you don't, without responding, you've acquiesced onto a ship. So there's a certain way that you need to say that. Now, I can't give you any advice. This is for information for, what is it?
Entertainment
purposes only. But this is what I said. Is it okay if I cross the bar and sit down at the defendant's chair while retaining all my unalienable rights, while in full effect, past, present, future in the matter? That's a lot to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
The judge says, well, are you in fact Mr. Faust? And my answer is, no, in fact, I'm not. Fiction, I am. But we're not talking about fiction here. You're asking me to lie? Are you kidding? Okay, so that's one way. The other thing is, the judge tells you, sit down. I say, I'm just going to go ahead and sit down. Now, what did I do? I just overruled his telling me to sit down, and I'm telling him what I'm going to do. Just happened to be the same thing, so that we're both in agreement. If he tells you three times to sit down, and you don't, I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to spend 5 days in the tank. Okay. A lot of my friends are here today, so call me in. Oh, smart, Ben. Okay.
So,
a question? Okay, go ahead.
I've been listening to some of the Gordon Hall stuff as well, and one of the things that they pound on in their material is that you don't make statements in court. For instance, when the judge says, are you an attorney? You don't say, I don't have to be an attorney. You say, do I have to be an attorney?
That's it. Do I have to be an attorney? Do you see? You turn that around into a question.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a great way to handle it.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, there's been some excellent suggestions made in how to handle yourself in the court. But we have to understand that the best game in town is game of law, especially after the fact that the United States of America has filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy. They're currently operating in a bankruptcy. There is no more law, and what they're operating under is statutes and ordinances. So therefore, all you have to do is understand law. It's the best game in town. I mean, you know, it may seem complicated, but it's actually not complicated. And you put certain things in place that sets you up, and you just simply play the game. Once you know the rules of the game, you can win in any game that you know the rules of. But if you don't know the rules of the game, you continue to be a victim of the commerce game. And so I would like to ask you all, if you send from the free articles, the 14th Amendment Exposed, the history of the United, truth about the United States government, and the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the commerce game. And I'll send that right on to you. Just email me at tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll get that information to you. And you can go ahead on and study that right there. And when you get ready to go into a courtroom, all you got to do is be studied up. And I mean, we have created one of the most comprehensive libraries inside the United States and made it available to people of African descent. And contact me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we get that thing to you. And that way you can start studying, and you can be prepared for these people, your bill collectors, credit card companies, mortgage companies. It doesn't matter who it is. Sheriff department employees, which are contracting, have absolutely no standing of the law because they're not officers of the law. They are policemen, which are have no more authority than a security guard. But if you don't know how to handle it, what to say to it, and how to get your little evidence and go in there and, you know, you won't have to do it but a couple of times. And once you do that, they put you on the list and say, watch out for that guy because he ain't like the rest. We can't rob him and handle him no way to count away. And so that's the way that goes. Now, we got a little I'm going to call open up this line briefly, area code 954. 954, come on in.
This is Janet Wigley. How you doing?
I'm fine, Janet. We got a few minutes. Be brief, sister. Hold
okay,
on your mind.
I will. Okay, my question is, before we do anything, we must remove our location, right? Before any paperwork go anywhere, we have to change that postal location, right?
Well, that depends on what you want to do. Now, if you want to set up your estate, involving that, but you can have enough skills from study and to dance all around it. Because, see, they don't have a leg. The only
okay.
one got a leg is you. When you walk in the courtroom, law has walked in there. Prior to you coming in there, there is no law. There's statutes and ordinances.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all how right. that goes.
All right, that sounds good.
All right, sister. Okay, now we got another caller. 317, come on in. Air code 317, what's on your mind?
I had a quick question.
Come on, bring it on.
All right, in your archives, in question of archives, you got any information in there about the gaming? So I'm hearing a lot about you can there's a bond on your birth certificate and you can redeem.
All that information is in there. All you got to do is give me a call tomorrow before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we can sit out and discuss it. How about that?
All right.
All right, brother.
All right.
Any more questions or comments? Now's the time. We got 2 minutes. Well, we had 2 minutes. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay, and I appreciate you all listening to this broadcast. And I'm going to request that you listen in over and over so y'all can get this thing down to a science. And contact me for that library so you can stop these people. I mean, I'm having a ball. I mean, the sheriff, I done seen some stuff that I know he can't get out of. And we got two mortgage companies, and we got them on the burner. And one of them done already said, well, look, we're going to call a lawyer. I said, well, they put the lawyer information down there. So what we'll do is we'll go ahead on and throw the lawyer on the burner. So when he get in there and try to defend them, he got to defend them with me on top of his shoulder. That's kind of hard to do. And it all involves you knowing how to do this thing. And, I mean, I just did it all through the mail. I mean, it is amazing once you understand the rules of the game, then you can play the game, okay? If you don't know the rules of the game, you can't play. And so I ask you all to go ahead and contact me so you can get access to all the artillery you need. And once you get that artillery, then you simply use it in every conceivable angle. I don't care if it's the light bill people. You know, you get them too. They're out there operating in commerce too. So contact me, Tahaka Amana El Bay. Before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at area code 904-303-9061, and we'll get your free articles to you. We'll discuss the library to you, find out what your problem is. We'll show you right where to go in there for the remedy. And for those of you who are on Facebook, I just got a message today. I've been banned for 30 more days. So send your friend request to Tahaka Amana El Bay. And that'll give you access to my wall, and we can communicate, and you can study the articles and new informative information that we put there. Okay? We're going to go ahead and close down. I appreciate y'all being here, and until next time.